How is the LGBTQ path to Phi different? Today, we're talking with the blogger Queer Phi about just that. It's not meant to be a comprehensive podcast episode, but the start of a conversation, and we hope to have many more conversations. So let's welcome Queer Phi.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Fire Drill Podcast. We're so excited to have BBR from Queer Phi here with us today. Hello and welcome.
Hi, it's great to be here.
And Gwen is here too.
Hello.
Hello, hello. All right, BBR. So tell us, who is this person behind BBR?
I just moved to Washington, D.C. I'm nearly 30 now. And I guess over the last 6 months, I've been going down the Phi rabbit hole and learning more about it and seeing how it already aligns with some of the things I've been doing already.
So you're coming at this path to fire through the lens of somebody who is queer. This presents a couple of different unique challenges that maybe some straight people don't have to worry about. So what is the first major difference between the queer and straight path to FI?
Well, the first thing that kind of hit me when I started diving into the blogs was this idea of a geo-arbitrage. For at least for me, I want to live in very specific places. I want to live in a big city, metropolitan areas. So this idea of kind of moving into the middle of nowhere was not really applicable. And as I got into it more, I realized there's more questions that I hadn't seen answered in the Phi world. A lot of those, I guess, had to deal with basically getting pregnant or adopting kids. I didn't really see much discussion on that. And I guess I wanted to be part of that conversation and see kind of what was out there.
So are you saving any differently right now to prepare for parenthood in the future?
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest differences because I know I need to save between like $10,000 and $15,000 for pregnancy. And that's kind of my next savings goal. So, you know, save for engagement rings, save for a house, save for a wedding. But knowing that there's an extra $10,000 or $15,000, maybe more, depending on how things go in order to get pregnant or even going towards adoption. And so those are things that I had to build into my planning for Phi that I hadn't really seen discussed other places. I'd seen people kind of come to paying for IVF or fertility treatments kind of as an afterthought, not something they were starting out planning for.
And how are you saving for that? Do you have the money set aside in a high interest savings account? Is it just brokerage money, checking account?
That's on the list. First, I'm saving, or we're saving for a wedding right now. But most of that is I have right now is in bonds and some CDs. I found those have a slightly better return than some of the high interest savings accounts.
Have you already started to look into researching the costs of what it costs to get pregnant?
Yeah, I've started to look into it. The biggest problem that I found is that a lot of the conversation is about a treatment for people who have fertility issues and for kind of cis lesbian couples or women couples, that's not necessarily the problem. So a lot of the information kind of details treatments that don't necessarily apply to what me and my partner might do in the future, though it might. And so I've just been able to find ballparks. And I was surprised at the dearth of articles, but I know there's a lot more hearsay. But in terms of what's accessible on the internet, I wasn't that successful in finding anything.
Do you think this is where like having a strong network can come in handy so you can ask people who've been there beforehand if, you know, what they experienced and what their costs were?
Yeah, this is definitely where a strong network would come into play. But as someone who just moved into a new city and kind of at the forefront of my friends group at this place, there's not too many people ask. I've reached out to some people on Twitter and some friends of friends to start to get a feel. But of course, this is a very personal thing, and some people have kind of complex feelings discussing it. So yeah, I wish I had people I could go to, but I'm just not in that place right now.
So you started your blog Queer Phi to almost provide a community in the Fire community to talk about these specific issues. Have you met anyone else doing this, or is there a community out there if anyone listening wants to reach out and find others?
So I've been able to contact with a few people from some of the various Phi Facebook groups, just from what they posted. I just sent them a message and said, hey, I want to connect on these points. In terms of the pregnancy, no, I haven't really seen anyone talk about it in detail. And I didn't do an extensive search. So if someone's out there, please point me in the right direction. But, you know, I just trying to pick up different people and you know, the more I post, the more people have interesting stories to share or things that I didn't know. So there are at least a few other queer LGBTQI people posting on Twitter. So I did a post about that. So I've been talking to them as well.
What are the Facebook groups that you're in?
Too many. Of course, I'm in your group, Choose FI DC, where I'm local, Stacking Benjamins, Queer Money, Millennial Money Man. Those are the main ones that I'm a part of, but I can't really keep up. There's just so much content.
You and me both. I am in a number of Facebook groups as well, and through Twitter and through Friends Network and various things. There's a lot of content being produced, which is fabulous, but it makes it hard to keep up sometimes as people are producing tons of good things and you just only have so many hours a day.
Yeah, and I found my local group, the local Choose FI group, has kind of been the best in terms of, you know, questions I have in my area. Like I was looking for a CPA a month or two ago, so I was able to jump into that group and ask people for local recommendations. And there have been other things about, I've been looking at buying a house and there's some first homeowner assistant programs that are only for Virginia. So I was able to go in there and ask people for some direction. So I definitely found that was a good resource in addition to Twitter, which is always just fun.
I kind of want to pivot and talk a little bit about the LGBTQ experience with healthcare.
Okay.
I can imagine that is very challenging.
Yes.
What has been your experience? And do you have any tips or advice that you can share?
I haven't had any major issues or problems to speak about. I've had received pretty good healthcare, but I've always received healthcare in a like metropolitan area where it's not really a question. I know some of my friends, where they choose to work has definitely been influenced by their need for certain types of healthcare and access to surgery and stuff like that. And one of my close friends definitely brought it up in her job interview. But for people who are trans or my friends that are trans, they've had a more difficult experience. But I know that's not everyone's experience. But it's definitely a key thing. And getting good healthcare and providers that don't deny you service is something that's often hard to find and does happen more often than you would think.
I know the employer I had previously before I moved to Washington, they offered healthcare for domestic partners. And that was hugely helpful for many of my friends. But that's not always an option. Do you have any experience with that?
I haven't really. I mean, that was more of a problem before same-sex marriage was legalized nationwide, definitely getting partner benefits. I know a kind of a joint thing to that in terms of finding a job is working in certain states that have workplace protections or housing protections. I know that's something that I was concerned about when I left my kind of home state of New York and first moved to two other states where, you know, you could get kicked out of your house for being LGBT or denied an apartment. So there was documented cases of that, but that was something I certainly thought about moving from a more liberal area to some place that was perceivably more conservative.
What is your partner's plan for healthcare? Do you ever plan to be covered by each other's healthcare?
Yes, I plan that so she's also employed full time. So I kind of plan that as soon as we're married, that we would have secondary insurance. I don't imagine any problem with that. And that's kind of, I guess, the blueprint that I grew up with.
When are you guys getting married?
Hopefully next year. That's currently a big point of discussion.
Well, congratulations on your engagement.
Oh, thank you.
And so you haven't picked a place and all that stuff yet?
No. Oh, so I should add one other thing that maybe doesn't apply to, or that's specific for queer couples, is that we bought two engagement rings. I don't know if we would have bought only one engagement ring that was twice as big if only one of us was getting a ring, but we ended up buying two rings. So that was like a little different and certainly cut in, you know, made a bigger kind of hole in our pocket than I think other couples would experience.
Now, see, this is something that I just wouldn't have thought about.
Yeah.
It's funny we're talking about engagement rings because earlier today I was practicing my Facebook ad skills and I was running a Facebook ad to a post that I wrote about my engagement ring. I don't have a diamond. I have moissanite, which is a lab-created stone. And a moissanite stone is only $300. And every time someone at work or whatever is like, wow, your diamond is just so sparkly. I'm like, oh, it's, you know, thank you, thank you. But it's really, it's this rock moissanite. So it's kind of interesting. What did you guys choose to go with?
So we have kind of standard diamond engagement rings. That's what worked best for us. Other people have asked me if it's typical that two female partners both get engagement rings or both get diamond engagement rings. And I've kind of found that everyone does their own thing. So that kind of worked for us. What was more interesting and what everyone keeps teasing us about is that I didn't realize that you can get financing on engagement rings. So before my fiance dragged me into a jewelry store, maybe in July, I hadn't, you know, never really thought about looking at engagement rings or financing or anything like that. It was just not on my radar. That's what I was most shocked at, that you could get financing and stuff. And I don't know why my friends keep teasing me, you know, this is America, you can finance anything, but it just hadn't crossed my mind.
Yeah. Jay, do you remember when we were talking to Andy Hill and he took his student loan money to buy his girlfriend their ring?
It's crazy. So does your fiance share the same FIRE dreams and goals as you?
Yes and no. She is just starting to get into some of the ideas of FIRE and spending time reading things and listening to podcasts. Some of the more interesting articles that I find and I send to her, she'll read. But she has a much different background than I do. So she has a different approach to all these things. So she has supported herself since she was a teenager. So she has a different view on these things where I, and it seems like maybe a lot of other people in the FIRE community come from very educated backgrounds. That's my assumption, but it seems like a lot of people have, graduate degrees and things like that, which she does have, but it certainly tilts our world views about saving now and saving for retirement and what could go wrong and what you have to worry about.
Did you discover this at the same time, the concept of FIRE?
No, I discovered it. And then I told her about this whole movement. And she's like, oh, you're listening to these podcasts. Whose podcasts are going to go talk to you? Like, what are you doing on Twitter? She knows I play around here, but she's not as involved at all.
But she's pretty supportive of your ideas, right?
Yeah, she's really supportive. And she, believes in owning a house and saving money and everything like that. But in terms of reading lots of blogs and doing travel hacking and all those things, she hasn't gotten there just yet. I've kind of been the go-getter in that area.
You know, Jay, I think that's been a pretty common theme in our chats with people now over the last year, is that one person in the couple is much more passionate and consumes much more content than the other.
That's definitely true. And the funny thing is, when you join our Facebook group, we have two questions. And the second question is, how did you find out about the podcast? You wouldn't believe the number of people who write, my significant other recommended I listen to it, and then I liked it.
Really?
Isn't that funny? Every time someone says that, I'm like, that's cool. But I'm glad, we're the ones that people are like, oh, listen to them. They're approachable, I guess. I don't know. We're entertaining. Who knows? But thank you to everyone.
I'd say we're both. All of the above.
D.
Entertaining and informational.
I would also agree. We also seem very approachable. And
oh my gosh. Well, thank you guys. Thank you. I'm flattered. Okay. So how far away are the two of you guys from FIRE? And do you calculate your path to FIRE together or separately?
Right now, I'm the only one who's calculating it. And I have it sort of separate, sort of together. We're just at the beginning of merging our finances. I haven't done the exact calculation about how far away we are. I would say, based on calculations, if we really buckle down, maybe 10 years. But I don't think that we're willing to necessarily tighten our belts that much to kind of get there. Some of the strategies about being frugal or kind of saving money are just things we don't want to tackle in our lives right now. So we'll probably be further out than that.
Do you want to buy in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, so we're looking for houses here in the greater D.C. area, which is an expensive market to live in, so high cost of living. I think the biggest thing for me buying in this area is that townhouses are readily abundant here. And at least the area that I'm moving from, there were no townhouses, so where I grew up. So the fact that a townhouse could cost so much money is something that I'm still adjusting to.
Yeah, I found it interesting how housing differs across the country. So where I grew up, everybody had a single family house for the most part. So you either lived in a single family house or you had an apartment complex that you lived in and that you rented. But in other areas, townhouses are much more popular. Multifamily housing is much more popular. And then even in big cities like New York and other big cities, buying an apartment is totally a thing. Like people buy apartments. In my area, you don't buy apartments, you rent them. Like it's completely 180 from what I'm used to.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get it wrap my head around all those things because condos and what the difference between a condo and a townhouse is still seems kind of arbitrary to me. But yeah, wrapping my head around that price of a townhouse can cost the same as a single family house with kind of a yard is still something I'm trying to get used to since we're looking to eventually buy in this market.
Well, you're also considering a multi-generational household, is that correct?
Yes.
So tell us more about that.
So my fiance is from an Asian country. I figured if I give away enough, people can triangulate who I am. But so in that culture, having parents live with you when they're older is totally normal. It should actually be fairly normal in the US, though we've kind of, among certain groups, shied away from that. So the idea that my mother-in-law or future mother-in-law would come live with us is definitely a possibility. And I hadn't really seen that in many of the discussions, Phi, or just kind of anywhere about how you set up a multi-generational household. So since I posted that one and I talked with you, Gwen, there's actually a few articles, including one in the New York Times about some of the details about having a multi-generational home. But there's nuances in there that I hadn't even thought about. Like when you buy a home, let's say with your parents or for your in-laws, you know, are they buying part of the house? Are they paying rent to you? What happens if you want to move or someone else wants to move? So we haven't totally gone down that rabbit hole as we haven't bought a house yet, though it's definitely on the horizon. But it's just something that I wanted to start thinking about that I hadn't thought about and I really hadn't heard discussed in at least the blogs and areas that I've been looking in.
So what are some of the other nuances that you found?
So the biggest one that I realized that I hadn't thought about is healthcare. So how do you provide healthcare for your in-laws who are living with you or your parents who are living with you? No, do they get government healthcare since they're in your household? Can you provide them healthcare through your job? Or does it cost a lot to add them onto your policy? So I haven't found too much details, but those are kind of the avenues that I've been looking at. Of course, there's the idea, just thinking about FIs paying for their groceries, how much they're going to contribute, paying for cars or other transportation. You know, if you pay for daycare, going on a family vacation. So things that added extra people to the equation that I hadn't given that much thought about. And I'm sure there's nuances that I'm missing, but they just were not something brought up in where I grew, at least the people I knew growing up or even in school.
If you have a favorite resource that you found, feel free to email us after this and we'll include it in the show notes.
So one thing I want to add to that discussion, I've been listening to Broke with Money with Gabby Dunn. She did talk about how her parents viewed her as kind of their retirement. And adding to that conversation is the idea that people whose parents or in-laws don't come from standard W-2 jobs may not have saved from retirement or haven't lived in the U.S. that much for that long, may not have the same kind of funds to support themselves. So I think that's also a conversation that some people must be having, but I haven't seen that bubble up in any of the forms that I'm on as you know, maybe why people don't have retirement or access to Social Security, because right, if you're not paying in enough credits, if you haven't lived here long enough. So there's all these nuances.
All sorts of variables.
Yes.
So before we get into the final two, I want to ask you, is there anything else that you want to mention from the Queerify or LGBTQ fire perspective that you'd like to share?
We touched on the two major things, but the geo-arbitrage in the U.S. or even traveling is sometimes considered a concern for me about, you know, where I live. We go stay in Airbnb in some country. I mean, even if we stay in an Airbnb in certain parts of Virginia, you know, I'm a little nervous, which, you know, maybe is uncalled for, but certainly there's enough stories to keep you on your toes. I think there are probably a few things down the line with retirement that I haven't thought about. So I spoke with one person through Facebook message who was in retirement, kind of fire, but only retiring a few years early, and asked her if there was more things on the horizon. She didn't have anything particular that was queer related, but I'm sure they're out there. I mean, some of the things, if you don't have kids and you need, you know, someone to take care of you in your old age. I mean, that's not necessarily a queer thing, but that certainly is something that comes up if you don't choose to have kids.
Great points. I don't think the fact that geo-arbitrage is not something that everyone can do is talked about at all. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Oh, and the other thing that we talked about was about you don't necessarily have parents that you can fall back on or you can go home to is like a definitely a big thing in the queer community. Not for everyone, but the fact that you might not go home for holidays or you might not have a place to live after college if you don't have a job or you can save money. Those two things are definitely privileges.
Yeah, because somebody might have been kicked out or their family disowned them after they came out of the closet, or, you know, they had to work and put all their money into living expenses, or they had to pay for school as they went. There's a lot of various factors that could play into them not having as secure a financial background.
Yeah, definitely not as secure. And on season 2 of Queer Eye, they definitely highlight a few cases where that kind of came up, where queer young men didn't kind of have the support they needed and kind of were going out on their own. So that's a good illustration if some of your listeners aren't as familiar as some of the issues that can come up.
If you haven't binged Queer Eye season 2 on Netflix, you haven't lived.
Oh my gosh, Jay, you have been all over that.
I was all over it immediately. I mean, I watched like 8 of them in 2 minutes. They're really good.
Bring tissues.
I follow them all on Instagram, by the way. So if you like Queer Eye season 2, follow them on Instagram and they interact with each other all the time. It's hilarious. But on a more serious note, you're totally right. And I think there are many bloggers in the FIRE community that travel full-time in like RVs, and then part of the year they live with their parents, with one of the person's parents. And I saw something on Twitter. It's called FIREBOM. It's an acronym.
Okay.
Financially independent, retired early because of mom's basement. And it's describing FIREBOM. Isn't that hilarious? But it's describing people that they do that. They travel and they go back. I think that's a great point, that in the queer community, you may not have that option. So that could be completely eliminated and you gotta do something else.
I think it could happen for, you know, queer people, but people who live in different countries than their parents or whatever the reason could be, don't have, you know, that safety net to fall back on, or they may just have their chosen family.
Great point. Okay, so it's about time for the final two. So, BBR, if people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
The best place right now is on Twitter. So my handle is just QueerFi. And I have a blog, but I started a W-2 job, as the two of you would say. So I've kind of been practicing getting up at 5 a.m. and haven't gotten many blog posts out.
Getting up that early is definitely rough. So good luck with the new job. Good luck with the engagement and the marriage. And we look forward to seeing more what's going on in your life.
But before we end with you,
okay,
what is your wildest dream?
The first thought that just came to mind is for free college. I feel like I should pick something more lofty, like being able to visit every country. Or not more lofty, but more personal.
You pick whatever your heart desires.
There's nothing wrong with going with free college, for sure.
I'll go with free college.
Okay, cool. Well, BBR, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.